This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina is the only state where a 16-year-old crime suspect is automatically treated as an adult in all circumstances. Some lawmakers in North Carolina are trying to change that. They say a 16-year-old is a juvenile and should be treated accordingly. But opponents of that legislation say we have to slow down. They say it won't do any good to raise the age if we don't have the resources or the planning in place to make for a smooth transition. Joining us today is Tamar Burkhead, assistant professor of law at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She is an advocate for raising the juvenile justice age. Tamar, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Why do you think we should raise that age?
There are a number of important reasons. For many, many years, North Carolina has been in the minority on this issue. Currently, 38 states in the country cap juvenile court jurisdiction at age 18, 10 at 17, and North Carolina is currently only one of two that has the age cap as low as 16. And the vast majority of 16 and 17-year-olds who do commit criminal offenses in this state commit misdemeanors, upwards of 80%. It's only a very, very small percentage that are convicted of felonies or felonies against the person. And this means that we are leaving our 16 and 17-year-olds, tens of thousands of them, with criminal convictions that then lead to barriers to employment, barriers to higher education, as well as a whole host of other negative collateral consequences.
And to clear up some confusion on this, I think you said one of only two states. The other state in that category is New York, but the judge has some jurisdiction or there's some ability on the part of the courts to try juveniles as juveniles. And
yes.
They don't have that discretion here.
Yes. In New York, there are two mechanisms by which juveniles can – or by which 16 and 17-year-olds can be returned to juvenile court. They can be given something called youthful offender status, or the court can use something called reverse waiver, which allows for criminal cases to be removed back into right. juvenile court. And in North Carolina, neither of those provisions is available.
So in that sense, we stand alone among all 50 states as trying all 16 and 17-year-olds as adults without discretion. But here's the thing. I mean, people will say, look, some of those crimes that are committed, even by 10, 11-year-olds, are pretty serious crimes. These kids aren't acting like juveniles. They need to be treated like the adults that their crime or alleged crime represents.
Right. Well, the proposal to raise the age would not change the age at which juveniles could be transferred from delinquency court to criminal court. And that age is 13 in North Carolina, which is one of the youngest ages in the country. And there's a very clear provision in the North Carolina General Statutes that allows for anyone who's 13 or older who's committed any felony to be transferred from juvenile court to superior court. So this general move to raise the age would not change the very real and relatively easy ability for courts to transfer just about any felony they want to superior court.
Well, earlier today we talked to Eddie Caldwell. He is the executive vice president and general counsel of the North Carolina Sheriff's Association. Unfortunately, he was unable to be on the show live because of a prior engagement, but he graciously agreed to a recorded interview earlier in the day. That association opposes the current effort to raise the juvenile justice age, and I asked him why.
The sheriffs, for a number of years, have been opposed to the legislation as it has been introduced to raise the juvenile age from 16 to 18 for a variety of reasons. They have never said they were opposed to raising the age under some circumstances that might come to pass, but the bills as introduced are fatally flawed, and the sheriffs have been opposed to those bills because of the fatal flaws in the bills.
What are those flaws?
The flaws, first and foremost, are lack of funding. The bill proposes to raise the law age in the future. Granted, some of the recent bills have said, let's do it incrementally, but that's just an incremental bad idea versus an all-at-once bad idea. The bill does not have any funding provided for it. And if you look at the fiscal note done by the legislature's own staff, they project that the cost in the first year will be $39 million, and by year four, $174 million per year. And there's absolutely not one penny of funding provided in the bill. The General Assembly, I won't say never, but almost never, I've never heard of them, changing a law that's going to cost this much money and saying we will hope the money will be there when the time comes. Secondly, in this economic environment where most of the legislative session is spent cutting the budget and trying to save money, it defies logic to pass a bill that will cost that much money and provide absolutely no money to fund it. The other thing that the bill does not provide for is it does not provide for any programs for these young folks. The kind of programming that a 10, 11, or 12-year-old needs is bound to be significantly different than what a 16 or 17-year-old needs. And so because there's no money, not only is there no money, but there's no programs to spend the money on to show, okay, how are we going to deal with these 16 and 17-year-olds? We're shifting them from the adult to the juvenile system, but how are we going to deal with them? What are we going to do for them that will turn their lives around? And the last thing that's not provided for is any money or any analysis of what to do about housing. You can't put you responsibly can't put 16 and 17-year-olds who have committed crimes in the same dormitory or in the same facility with the younger kids, or all you're doing is taking advanced criminals to teach younger kids how to even be bigger criminals. None of those issues are addressed. There are no programs provided, no facilities, no plans. And I will say this to the advocates for this legislation. When they are asked what provisions they have for all these things, they have no answer. And so it's not that they've got it figured out and they just hadn't told anybody. They hadn't got it figured out either.
So
just want to raise it and then hope that it'll all work out later.
We tried
that in the mental health system. The legislature dismantled our mental health system before they created a new system. And it was a colossal failure and a nightmare, and the legislators themselves who were involved in it have said that publicly.
Right.
And so we should learn from past mistakes and not dismantle this system to go to a new system for which nobody knows what it is and nobody has any money to pay for it.
So if we had those resource questions worked out and the plan laid out, how would the Sheriff's Association feel about lifting the mandate for trying 16, 17-year-olds as adults?
The association has not taken a position on a bill or a proposal that has not yet been written, because if you do that in the legislative process, people tend to say, oh, they're in favor of the idea regardless of the details, and that would not be accurate. And so what the sheriffs have said is if the advocates come up with a plan of how to implement this, and if they come up with a method to fund it, at that time, the sheriffs will analyze that bill and then determine what their position might be on it. But at this point, there's a plan to change it with no funding and no plan on how to implement it, and that's fundamentally flawed. And I can't think of any other bill where the General Assembly has passed a bill that says we don't know what we're doing, but we want to do it, and we don't know how we're going to pay for it, but let's go ahead and change the law and make it effective. And surely it'll sort itself out in the next two or three years. I can't think of any other bill where they've taken that approach.
That's Eddie Caldwell, Executive Vice President and General Counsel of the North Carolina Sheriff's Association. We taped that interview this morning. Tamar Burkhead, law professor at North Carolina UNC Chapel Hill. What do you think?
Well, my first reaction, Frank, having looked at the legal history and the legislative history throughout the past 100 years in North Carolina, is just how disheartening it is, frankly, to hear the same responses being made by Mr. Caldwell that have been made really since, 1919. I looked at primary source materials and legislative documents, and through the 40s and the 50s, the same objections were being made in terms of raising the age. The advocates were making similar arguments, and the objections based on lack of funding, etc.
That might just mean it's been a good argument for 80 years. If you move those kids without moving the money, it's trouble. What about that?
Well, Yes, that is true. We don't want to move the kids without moving the money. But first, just to respond to his comment about housing, the dangers of housing 16 and 17-year-olds with younger adolescents, it's sort of ironic because that's the argument that Raise the Age advocates have been promoting all these years in terms of 16 and 17-year-olds being housed with older felons. And of course, we have all of these studies now that show that 16 and 17-year-olds in particular are most vulnerable when they're in prison with adults to assault, to rape, and that the services that they need in order to be rehabilitated, such as education, mental health counseling, substance abuse treatment, none of those things are available to the degree in which they need to be in the adult system. As for the money, I mean, I'm confident that the proposal that will ultimately be passed in the General Assembly will absolutely take account of funding, and it will be very sensitive to the concerns and needs of law enforcement and of the juvenile courts system, which, folks who are currently working as part of the juvenile delinquency system, the last thing they want is to have an influx of thousands of additional young people without the means by which to serve them.
On the state of things today, Tamara Burkhead is with us, assistant professor of law at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, talking about raising the age at which juveniles can be tried in the adult system. On the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today, talking about efforts to change the way juveniles are viewed by the justice system in North Carolina. With us in the studio is Tamara Burkhead. She's an assistant professor of law at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Joining us now is Eric Zogry. He's an attorney with the state's Office of Juvenile Defender. Welcome, Eric. Good to have you back.
Thanks.
Also joining us, William Lassiter, the Community Program State Administrator for the North Carolina Department of Public Safety. William, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Eric, you have some experience with juvenile offenders on the ground level. Is there a fundamental difference? Are they different from adult offenders?
Well, they're totally different. They are not small adults, or sometimes referred to as little criminals, unfortunately. We know really from common sense, but specifically from recent scientific data, that the perception and the processing of juveniles, anybody – when I say juvenile, certainly anybody under the age of 18 – is markedly different from how adults process situations and circumstances, and that has been reflected on issues of culpability and how the courts treat adults and juveniles.
Well, I want to talk to William Lassiter here for a minute because I know that your group, as I understand, is not necessarily opposed to raising the age, but you do have some concerns, some of them reflected by Eddie Caldwell in the previous segment.
Yeah, we absolutely support the change because we know that juveniles that are 17 and 18 years old, 16, 17 and 18 years old, are not fully developed. If you look at the brain research that's been done on juveniles at that age, they just, as my mom used to say when I was 16, you only have half a brain. Mm-hmm. And that's what we see with these juveniles. Our concern, obviously, as the Division of Juvenile Justice, is that the resources do follow those kids when they enter the system.
Yeah. Well, not only you and your mom, but it turns out neurobiology now shows that really
Absolutely.
For males, not until you're 26 years old, as mm-hmm. you suggest. But then there's another question. So you talked about the resources and will it follow? That will there be enough programs? Will there be enough housing? Or is this going to be like our mental health system? We threw them out in the street with that. But then there's another serious question, it seems to me, one I put to Eddie Caldwell this morning in our interview, and I expressed concerns about the cost, but also about the public safety aspect, whether or not public safety is compromised by raising the age.
Yes, it absolutely does. And one of the fatal flaws in the bill is it does not distinguish between the 16 or 17-year-old who makes a mistake for the first time. And the 16 or 17-year-old who has been a professional criminal since age 10, 11, or 12 and is just gaming the system. And for those kids who have been involved in a professional life of crime since a much younger age, they've just been getting by and not going, you know, not having the more serious sanctions applied to them because they're a juvenile. And those kids basically then are just going to get two more years of the juvenile system, when what they really need is the adult system.
Well, maybe.
Let me clarify that by saying one of the best examples of that is drug dealers prey on young folks to be their drug runners because they know they won't have anything significant done to them. And they get these kids that are under 16 to haul their dope for them because they know they won't get sent to prison. And if you raise the age from 16 to 18, now what you've done is provided the drug dealers with drug runners who now have a driver's license. Mm-hmm. And yes, that will impact public safety dramatically.
You do have the right. The state always reserves the right to try them as adults. So if they're repeat offenders from the age of 8, the state has the right still to try them as adults on a case-by-case basis. So in your case, that kid could still be tried as an adult at 16 or 17.
There are limited there are provisions in the statute. I don't believe that any person under 16 can be tried as an adult for any offense. I can't give you the precise dissection of that statute, but typically it's the more heinous offenses, murder, rape, that kind of thing, but not the other cases.
All right, so that's Eddie Caldwell, Executive Vice President and General Counsel of the North Carolina Sheriff's Association. We taped an interview with him earlier this morning. Tamar Burkhead, we talked about it earlier, but let's clarify it once more about whether or not the state can prosecute 13-year-olds and older as adults.
Yeah, it's General Statute of North Carolina 7B2200. Your audience members may Google that, and they'll see that. If you are 13 and charged with any felony, a transfer could occur from juvenile court to adult criminal court. And the other reaction that I have to what Mr. Caldwell said involves the fact that, you know, right now we have this lower cohort of kids in juvenile court. And then when they go to adult court at age 16, it's almost as though their history is lost in a sense. If we have just original jurisdiction in juvenile court for everyone under the age of 18, then that institutional memory in a sense won't be lost. And those that small percentage of young people who do commit increasingly more and more violent acts will be identified much more readily and will be followed much more closely. And the other irony that that I'd want to point out is that in juvenile court, you know, if a 16-year-old were in juvenile court, they would be evaluated. Their parents would be under the jurisdiction of the court. Their grades would be looked at. It would be a much more comprehensive analysis and much more rigorous probationary term, probably one the 16-year-old would not want, than if they were in adult court, where one of two things happens. Either the 16-year-old is just given, you know, a short program to complete, and then they're lost again, or you know, they do end up with a criminal conviction, and that follows them through the rest of their lives.
And they're out of school. Well, Eric Zoghri, so from on the ground, give us a sense of what really happens. I guess you'd have the feeling that when young people, juveniles, commit terrible crimes, maybe they should go into the adult system, teach them a lesson. But I understand that it's been your experience that because of their youth, sometimes they actually get off lighter in the adult system than they might have in the juvenile system.
Well, that's absolutely true. I think one misconception is that the sanctions are less in the delinquency system. But if you spend any time in court, you see that that's not true. One of the biggest distinctions between adult and juvenile court is that you don't have the right to bail in juvenile court. So in other words, in adult court, if you're charged with a crime and you're locked up, you can pay your way out. In delinquency court, the judge has to make a determination before you're free to leave. And that's based on a number of factors, including what's your danger to the community, what you've been charged with, do you have, you know, reliable oversight. The adult court doesn't care about that. you know, they'll let you out on a, you know, on an unsecured bond. But in delinquency court, that cannot happen. That's part of the set of rules. You know, I just heard the other day an attorney tell me, well, you know, my client's trying to get me to bind him over because he knows the sanctions in adult court are going to be less and he's going to be under less supervision and less structure, as Tamar said. And that's not, you know, so crazy.
Well, let me ask Tamar about this, because then you mentioned this, but I'd like to hear more. The adult system really doesn't care too much about school. They're not geared to know about that, whereas the juvenile system does connect the student with, or the offender in this case, with school supervision as well as parental supervision.
Right. And it happens to be compounded these days, Frank, with the fact that in North Carolina at age 16, you can legally drop out of school. So that's another piece of legislation that hopefully will be changed at some point. Yes, in juvenile court, it almost always is a condition of one's probation that you maintain passing grades at school, that you don't have unexcused absences, that you don't have any suspensions. Teachers come to school or are contacted by juvenile court probation officers to give updates on how children are doing. It's really a critical component of what is followed and what is considered important in the juvenile system, whereas in the adult system, you know, courts just don't have the time or the resources or the inclination to spend that kind of energy on 16 and 17-year-olds. So, you know, as I said, that because the vast majority of that population commit very low-level misdemeanors, they just are in and out. And nothing is really looked at.
Well, I want to ask William Lasseter what these programs would look like, because it does seem that one of the serious challenges is whether or not there'd be resources and new programs. Are there different programs that would be – that you'd have to create for 16 through 18-year-olds that aren't in place right now in our juvenile system?
There would be, and that has been studied. And one of the things that Mr. Caldwell said was that this hasn't been studied or planned out right. And we have done that. We had a task force that was put in place in 2009, and it studied this issue for a whole year and has actually made recommendations on what types of programming need to be put in place. And those recommendations included things like transition homes for kids, more substance abuse programming for kids, more group homes for kids. We have multi-purpose juvenile homes that are available for kids. Those types of programming, they would be deeper in type of programs for older kids. But one of the other things he did say was that they would be housing these kids with older juveniles in the system. And that's really not true. If you look at our system right now, the average age of a kid in our youth development centers, which is a committed facility for a juvenile in the state of North Carolina, is actually 16 and a half. So the average kid that's in our system right now, because they committed their crime before they were 16 and stay for a year or year and a half in the youth development center, is actually that age already. And so we are accustomed to working with this population. We know how to work with the population. Our concern is that we would have the resources. For example, we'd need additional court counselors, which are the equivalent to probation officers in the adult system. We would need additional community programs. And we've planned that out. That fiscal note that Mr. Caldwell referred to, it really laid out all the types of programming that we'd need to put in place across the state of North Carolina to make this happen. And yes, it does sound expensive, and we would need those resources. But in the long term, this was going to save the state money. There's been two studies that have been done, one by the Vera Institute and one by a cost-benefit analysis that was done by the Governor's Crime Commission. And both of those studies showed that the long-term benefits to the state, to the citizens, to that juvenile themselves would actually outweigh the cost, the short-term cost that we would see in changing the system up front.
And when we see the cost figures for the programs you describe, are those gross cost or are they net? I mean, it seems to me that what you would have to do at some point is take out the money you're now spending in the adult system for 16 through 18-year-olds, transfer that to the juvenile system. Has that been done in these computations?
I think that there was a look at doing that with the fiscal note that the legislator did. But I don't know that everything was taken into account. And until you get some some kids actually going through the system, you don't know exactly where all the costs are going to be and where all the savings are going to be. There definitely would be some savings for the adult system, and there would be some additional costs for the juvenile system. And it does cost more to serve a kid in the juvenile system, but that's because they get additional services. And those additional services are what have shown so much progress with these kids. In the state of North Carolina, I just want to point out, juvenile crime is down. For the last 6 years, juvenile crime has dropped in the state of North Carolina. At the same time, we've also reduced the number of kids that we've committed to long-term youth development centers. So we've locked up fewer kids, and juvenile crime is down. Something's working here. And I think that if we expand that to 16 and 17-year-olds, we could get those same results with those kids also. It will cost a little bit more, but down the road, those benefits will pay off.
What does it mean in other states? I mean, we're either one of 40, one of two, or one of the only state that has, you know, kids tried at this age. What's the experience, Eric Zogby? I'll start with you in other states where they start generally at 18.
Well, you know, I work with defenders in other states, especially in the South and the Southeast, and I can tell you that when we start discussing issues facing our states, and they say, well, we have waiver issues, we have this and that. And I say, yeah, well, we have the age at 16. You know, I'm immediately laughed out of the room. States have figured this out ahead of time. The defenders don't see it as any difference, and I don't think the systems see it as any different. You know, Mississippi just changed their law last year to include 17-year-old misdemeanants. And, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know Mississippi doesn't have a lot of money, and they've figured it out.
Well, I want to go back to Eddie Caldwell because he is definitely concerned about the money and where it would come from. Once again, Eddie Caldwell.
You can look on the General Assembly's website at House Bill 1414, and there's a physical note attached, and the legislative staff has outlined the cost. I haven't looked at the fiscal note in several years. A lot of it's to the Department of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, which is now part of the Department of Public Safety, and other areas of state service. But, you know, first and foremost, if you take a group of young folks in this 16 to 17 age range and you put them in the juvenile justice system, then the juvenile justice system has to have resources to provide for the programs and the assistance that these young folks are going to get.
Well, this wouldn't be a question for you, but it seems to me that it costs us now to put them in the adult system. Wouldn't you just transfer the money that you spend working them through the adult system, both in the courts and then whatever kind of supervision follows, and move that over to juvenile?
I think that's a reasonable question to ask, but I trust the expert physical analyst on the General Assembly staff to have included that in their analysis. And certainly, if they had not included it, this physical note was done a couple of years ago. And if there was that gaping hole in it, it was done July of 2009. So if there was that kind of gaping hole in their analysis, number one, someone would have exposed it by now, some of the advocates for this change. And the staff who prepared it probably would have been terminated from their employment. So I would suspect that kind of gaping hole is not in their physical analysis, and they've accounted for the concerns that you addressed.
And there's Eddie Caldwell, Executive Vice President and General Counsel of the North Carolina Sheriff's Association. We talked with him earlier today. Tamar Burkhead, let's talk about the politics of this. Clearly, money is going to be an issue, so it's a matter for the legislature. It's a fiscal concern. It's a public safety concern. Where is the effort now legislatively? What about legislation before the legislature, and who is supporting it?
My understanding is that there's bipartisan support for the pending bill, that there is support from prominent folks in law enforcement, that there is support from conservatives. I'm hoping that it's just a matter of time before the General Assembly has the will and essentially the moral gumption to follow through on an issue that is just critically important to our state in terms of having, productive, educated, employable citizens. And the other political reality is that we're talking about 16 and 17-year-old kids who are not a strong political constituency like the Sheriff's Association. They are composed primarily of low-income children, many children of color. And we as a state, as a community, need to recognize that these are our children. It's not These are not someone else's children. They are all of our children. And we have to just buckle down and insist that this happen. It's happened in every other state in this country, as Eric said. And it's really time to act and to stop recycling, you know, these same objections.
We got a statement today from Republican Representative Marilyn Avila, who is one of the co-sponsors of the legislation to raise the age. She's a Wake County Republican, and she sent us a statement today saying that she certainly supports the change. Eric, I don't have too much time left, maybe about 30 seconds. Do you see any movement or people when you hang around the courthouse in terms of law enforcement, prosecutors, any change in sentiment on this proposition?
Well, I've been traveling the state in the last 7 years. I've been to at least three quarters of the courthouses, and it's rare that somebody objects to this, especially those who have worked with both those under 16 and 16 and 17-year-olds. They're the ones who do this on a daily basis. They're the ones who understand that there really is no difference and they should all be treated the same in one system.
On the State of Things today, I want to thank all of my guests. Eric Zoghri is a juvenile defender with the state's Office of Juvenile Defender, Tamar Burkett, an assistant professor of law at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and William Lassiter is the Community Program State Administrator for the North Carolina Department of Public Safety. Thank all of you for being on the program. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up ahead, a UNC professor tries to figure out why there aren't more terrorist attacks in America. Stay with us on the State of Things.